Al will be forever the myth.
You're the king of kings, Al.
There's always a pecking order. The little peckers never mess with the big peckers. So I'm a rooster, and he's a chicken.
This episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast is brought to you by our sponsor, Old School Labs and Florida Alternative Medicine. All right, welcome everybody to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, where we talk about the history of bodybuilding, and we also talk to the bodybuilding legends themselves. And on today's show, instead of going into the past, we're going to do something different this week. I had a chance to talk to Sean Ray, because Sean is one of the ambassadors for the Mr. Olympia contest this year, and he is helping to promote the show with the promoter, of course, Dan Solomon. And so we had a chance to talk to Sean about what's happening this year at the Mr. Olympia. So we got a chance to talk about all the top contenders and what Sean thinks about who's going to do well and who's out of it. And we also got a chance to talk a little bit about Sean Roden and the problems he's going through. So it should be a really good show. We're not going into the past. Like I said, this week we're going to talk about what's coming up this year in the bodybuilding world today. But it's always an interesting discussion with Sean Ray. He's very opinionated and also very articulate. And being in the sport for as long as he has and doing all the things he does, he's very, very knowledgeable about what he's saying. So I think you're really going to enjoy this interview. All right. Before we get to that, though, I do want to mention that we are brought to you by our sponsor, Old School Labs. I've been with Old School Labs for several years now. This is the supplement company that draws on the wisdom of the golden era of fitness and bodybuilding to offer unique supplements for the discerning athlete. Old School Labs is the only brand that I use, trust, and associate my name with. And it's the brand I used to win the Natural Mr. Universe contest in 2012. You may have heard of their award-winning fat burner, Vintage Burn, the world's first muscle-preserving fat burner, or Vintage Blast, their two-stage pre-workout, or Vintage Brawn, the triple protein isolate powerhouse. It's packed with eggs, milk, and beef protein. Their products have no proprietary blends, no artificial flavors, colors, or sweeteners. Old School Labs is the home of 1983 Mr. Olympia Samir Banoot and bodybuilding legend Tom Platz. So use the discount code LEGENDS12 and you will get 12% off your order at oldschoollabs.com. Old School Labs, supplements that make sense. All right, and speaking of Old School Labs, they are sending me out to the Olympia this year, which is only, I believe, 8 weeks away from this last weekend. So it is coming up quick. It'll be in the middle of September. So if you never had a chance to go out to see it, you should try to make it out to Vegas and see it. So it'll be, I believe, September 12th, which is the Thursday, and it goes all the way into the 15th, which is that Sunday. So I'm looking forward to going out there again this year. I went out there last year. I don't think, as I said before, I don't think Old School Labs is going to have a booth, but I will be there walking around at the expo, and I'm pretty sure Samir Banoot is going to be there. And also Tom Platz is going to be there. So that'll be great to hang out with those guys and see those guys again. Also, the Tampa Pro Show is only 2 weeks away, so I will definitely be going to that as well. Dexter Jackson is going in that. And Sean talks about Dexter's chances of how he thinks he'll do at the Olympia as well on our interview coming up in a minute. And Dexter looks like he's probably going to win that Tampa Pro pretty easily. I think Luke Sandow is the only one who's competing against him that should give him a run for his money. Big Rami was supposed to do the show, but I guess he dropped out for the whole year, so he's not in it. So that will be interesting. I'll get to see a lot of big people in the bodybuilding industry in only 2 weeks, and it's actually right down the street from my house. It's at the hotel, the big Hyatt Hotel, I believe, and it's going to be right down the street. It's like literally 5 minutes away, so it's real convenient for me. So I'm looking forward to seeing that, and I'm sure I'll see a lot of pro bodybuilders from all the different divisions. They'll be at the gym, because at Powerhouse Gym Athletic Club, where I train, they allow all the pros to train for free. So they all come out and train. So only a couple more weeks and I'll be seeing that. So that'll be great. So next week, we will have part two of our Vince Taylor interview. And we ran that last week. And for those of you that never got a chance to see the video of that interview, I hope you enjoyed that. We did get one comment on the Facebook page. Patrick Neve said, "Great show. I really liked everything about Vince. He was way better than he believed. A real legend and someone who really helped the sport of bodybuilding." And then on my emails, I got a email from Lee, and he said, "Hi, John. I hope all is well. I love the throwback podcast from the vault with Vince Taylor. Always good insight. I was listening to some early podcasts, and I know they didn't compete, but what about getting the Barbarian Brothers on the podcast to talk about their training, et cetera, how Gold's Gym used to be? I think they would be very interesting." Yeah, I believe the one Barbarian Brother kind of dropped out of sight, but I think David is a photographer right now, and I could try to reach out to him. I did reach out to him before, but he never responded like most of them don't. So I could try and reach out to him again. I did reach out to Gary Leonard yesterday, so I'm hoping to hear back from him. But when we get done with our Vince Taylor interview, when we have part two next week, we will be doing a two-year anniversary special. So that'll probably be over two parts because we had so many interviews over the last year. I'm having fun putting those interviews together, going back and listening to some of those old interviews and getting some of the good parts from those. So that'll be really a fun couple of episodes that'll be coming up in a couple of weeks. So I hope you guys are surviving the weather. The weather is like super hot all over the country. It's super hot out here in Florida, as usual, very high humidity in the 90s. So we always have to put up with that during the summer months. But I think the rest of the country is really going through some hot weather this year. So I hope you guys are surviving that. I hope your training is going good. My training is going really good. I'm like up to about 225, which is really heavy for me. I definitely put some fat on the waist. But the training itself is going great. I'm really strong and big. So I love this. This is what I've always done with my training, is I always had a long off season. You know, when I was competing in the 20s and my 30s, I would always probably spend at least 10 months just bulking up and getting strong and big. I never tried to stay lean all the time. And I'm kind of going back to the same thing now. I'll probably do this for a while and then get leaner, just like I did last year when I went through that long diet. So I'm just going to try and not put on too much fat, maybe cut it back a little bit. Doing my deload week this week. So I just finished my mass cycle and that went really, really well. The training's been going great. If any of you are interested in learning about that MP6 training that I follow, I've been doing it now for probably 5 years now. You can check out Amazon.com has my book, The MP6 Workout, or you just email me at naturalolympia@gmail.com and I can get you any of the books if you're interested. I've also got the Bodybuilding Heroes and Legends Volume 1. That sold really, really well. And then my latest book was The Diary of a Natural Bodybuilder. And all those are on Amazon as well if you don't want to get them from me. But if you want to buy them directly from me, you can do that. Just email me at naturalolympia@gmail.com. All right, before we get to our interview with Sean Ray, I also want to mention that we are brought to you by our other sponsor, Florida Alternative Medicine, where age is just a number. If you want to feel great, optimize your energy levels, burn fat, and balance your hormone levels to maximize your potential, then go see the experts at Florida Alternative Medicine and Weight Loss. They have a certified and knowledgeable staff that will work with you to achieve your goals and get you the results that you've been looking for. They offer a wide range of services that ensure you will not only look and feel amazing, but also be comfortable knowing that they're there for you every step of the way. Their competitive pricing, along with their quality products and services, are just a few reasons to give them a call. So you can call them at their office number, which is out here in Tampa, Florida, 813-922-8939, or you can just use their website, flalternativemeds.com. And if you do call them, mention that you heard this ad on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, and they will give you a free consultation. Plus, they'll also give you 20% off your order. All right, so that is it for our opening. Here is our interview with Sean Ray, the legendary Sean Ray, where we're going to talk about this year's Mr. Olympia. And we also had a chance to talk about Sean's best contest that he competed in at the Mr. Olympia, his most exciting Mr. Olympia shows. So it's going to be a great interview, as it always is, with Sean Ray. Here we go. All right, welcome back to the Bodybuilding Legends Show. And my special guest this week is Mr. Sean Ray. And we've had Sean on the show several times before to talk about his career and to talk about the history of bodybuilding, as we always do. But today we're going to do something a little different. We're going to talk about current events. The upcoming Mr. Olympia is taking place on September 12th through 15th weekend, and it's only 8 weeks away, so we got Sean himself to talk about the show. How you doing, Sean?
I'm good, John. What's happening? I'm out here in summertime, California, and I'm actually home, and I'm not on the road, so I'm good.
All right. That's unusual for you, huh?
Yeah, but it's starting to heat up. I mean, this is a very busy run between now and, of course, the Mr. Olympia and the things that come after it, you know. The NPC's expanded to the NPC worldwide, and of course, Tyler Mannion was appointed the new vice chairman of the NPC, and Robin Chang is leading the way with the expansion of the NPC rapidly. Like within 2 years, the NPC is everywhere, from Taiwan to freaking Nepal, India, China. NPC, it's taken off, which has opened more doors for me, because as a host and a master of ceremonies, I just got back from China July 1st, hosting the Amateur Olympia there. I'll be headed over to Chile, Santiago, Chile, August 10th and 11th for Black's Gold. And then I'll wind up over in Italy, and I'm headed over to Switzerland. So the NPC worldwide is doing good. And this is all while I'm ramping up for the huge Olympia weekend, Joe Reeder's 55th. And then, of course, I have the third annual Sean Ray Hawaiian Classic, November 23rd. In Honolulu, Hawaii. So I'm in the gym doing what I need to do so I can manage these trips and raise these kids.
Yeah. This is your third annual already, Sean Ray Classic?
We're on the third annual in Honolulu, Hawaii's biggest event of the year. And, of course, this past March, I did my very first Sean Ray Maui Classic with my partner, Alan Ichinose, who's also a former and retired IFBB pro bodybuilder from Hawaii.
Remember him,
Yeah, but when I met Alan... I worked for him in 1994 when O.J. Simpson was running up the 5 freeway in the white Bronco. I was out there guest posing for Alan. That was the year I got second in the Olympia. So we reunited. He's a gym owner out there at Kakako Fitness. He has the Kaika competition that he just had a week ago out in July. And now he's got another show, Maui Ikaika, in October. And he's my partner for the month of March. So we're doing big things out in Hawaii. And we're moving and shaking.
Who you got guest posing this year in November?
So I got Brandon Curry, his wife, Brandy. Yeah, she's from Hawaii. They were headed home. They were headed home for Thanksgiving, which is the following weekend. They got like an army of kids, 4 kids or something. But he's coming out there. And, of course, I got Chris Cormier and the Hall of Famer Rich Gaspari, who's coming out there. He'll have a newborn by then. He's going to be a dad at 55.
I heard about that. Yeah.
I think the baby's due this month or early August. He'll be out there. Of course, his Gaspari Nutrition does very well in Hawaii with the military. And the Maryland Muscle Machine, Kevin Lavroni, is coming out there along with his Lavroni Signature Series product line. So we're going to have a nice lineup of pros in the house representing at my show, which is at the Hilton Hawaiian Village. It's on the same weekend as the Nationals out there in Florida, where I'm sure you're probably going to be on November 23rd.
Yeah.
That's the only downside is that, you know, that's where I turned pro. 1987 was the Nationals weekend. And now my show is actually on the same day. It's not a pro qualifier, but it is an NPC qualifier. And I do send my champions to different places. Last year, I sent a couple of my champions to China, and that was a pro qualifier. And, the champions from the Maui show, they're going to, I'm sending 3 of them to Japan, where Hitata's got the Amateur Olympia. He's working with me, and we're going to send 3 of those champions to compete for a pro card in Japan. That'll be the 1 week before my show in November.
Wow. So
there's a lot going on, a lot coming up and a lot going on. And for me, in retirement from the stage, life couldn't be better. Although there have been murmurs of me making a comeback. Have you heard anything about that?
I did. I saw that on your Facebook page. What's that about?
What did it say, actually? What did the Facebook post say?
It said something like, how about a comeback? And the back was in big letters.
Didn't it say something like, I'm making a comeback?
Yeah, yeah.
I was sitting in the Vancouver airport coming back to California. I never said
you're
I was coming back.
Coming back, okay.
I'm coming back. Everybody picked up the ball and ran with it. And, next thing you know, I realized they like me. They really like me. And they missed my physique on that stage, so I didn't want to put the fire out. Hell, we had some pretty crazy news in the last few weeks in bodybuilding. I figured, why not have some
good. Yeah, why not add to it? Right.
It's nice to be missed. It's nice to be loved. Right. But, you know, I was coming home. Well, you know, and most people in the industry think home for me is on the Olympia stage in posing trunks.
Right. How do you think you would look, Sean, if you decided to train hard for whatever?
Well,
whether it was the Olympia or just doing it for yourself?
As a bodybuilder that's never been injured, I probably wouldn't make it to the stage, because you got to remember the mentality of an athlete that's coming from retirement. I've been sedentary in terms of training at that level for 18 years. It'll be 18 years, John,
wow.
in 2001.
That's when, crazy.
When September comes around, it'll be 18 years off the stage, which means I haven't trained at that level.
Yeah.
And naturally, I'm smart enough to know that I would start slow and work my way up.
Mm-hmm.
But come back to what? I mean, there's a lot that goes into, you know, when I was young, and I call myself a kid back then, but in those days, you trained a little bit with a reckless abandon, but you also knew the hands of time were working against you because there's only going to be so many opportunities for that. But that was a childhood teenage dream of mine,
mm-hmm.
to be number one in the world. And 18 years in retirement, when you get that far from the stage and you realize you got out with no injuries, and then you watch the other guys, you know, Kevin Livroni was having knee issues. Flex Wheeler had kidney issues. Nasser mm-hmm. El-Sombati is dead. Barry DeMay tore his pec. Rich Gaspari tore his pec. Ronnie Coleman's like in a wheelchair. And you start looking, you start taking inventory. If I were to go in the gym now, rather than think of me conquering the weights, I'd be trying to calculate how much weight I should be using, what kind of form I'm using. I'd be thinking too much. And as an athlete, as a fighter, as a competitor, when you're young, you don't think about what goes into it. You just do it.
Mm-hmm.
You're a machine. You are a machine. You're not thinking about how sore you're going to be tomorrow. You're not thinking, am I going too low on these squats? Am I going to blow my knee out?
Is this hamstring
going to tear? Am I potentially going to pull my lat out if I'm doing these hanging
right.
pull-ups?
Right.
When I was training a little bit with some intensity, I was thinking, shit, you know, I remember when Fuchs was doing the squats for Chris Lund and he crashed and tore his quads.
Mm-hmm.
I was retired and I was messing around with like three plates. And the picture it came in my mind like, shit, why am I, I'm not even getting paid to do this anymore. Why am I squatting three plates, compressing my spine, putting this weight on my shoulders to lead nowhere? I'm not taking my clothes off for anybody. I'm not posing. I'm not. And so either it's in you or it's not. And for me, I think somewhere along the way, I turned off the bodybuilding and I turned on the exercise because I still go to the gym.
Yeah.
I go to the gym when I want, when I can. And when I go there, I realize I'm exercising because training for me is a place that not a lot of people want to be with me. I used to drag people into the deep end and try to drown them. And it's a different mindset when you're training for competition.
Mm-hmm.
People, well, you know, you did it for so many years. How can you just walk away? And I said, well, you have to calculate all the things that go into it, like time and sweat equity to dollars and cents. The fact that I'm free, that I could actually go walk on the beach instead of walk on the treadmill, that I can actually go swimming and not worry about being analyzed at my swimming pool because my neighbors don't give a shit what I look like.
Right.
But, you know, I'm not going to go take my shirt off and pose in the mirror to see what I'm looking like in Gold's Gym anytime soon. So I think with maturity comes the idea that, you know, I want to just be healthy. And
mm-hmm.
when I look at my peers, Mike Christian, a few other guys, it seems like they kind of get it. But even still, John, I'm not that guy that's in the gym every day at 5 o'clock and that's how I'm going to die. I'm just not that guy. I did it for pay. I did it for competition and I had a purpose for going to the gym. Now my purpose is to be healthy, to be flexible, to look and appear fit, calories in, calories out. But
mm-hmm.
to think that I'm going to spend the second half of my life in this box doing what I did for 30 years, it's not going to happen for me. There's too many things I like doing that I never got to do as a bodybuilder.
Yeah.
As a bodybuilder, you got to realize there's a lot you cannot do. You can't go swimming and riding bikes and bowling and playing
mm-hmm.
basketball. Those are things, John, that I do because I'm actually making up for the time that I couldn't do it.
Yeah.
That
makes sense.
You'll find me in a bowling alley. You'll even find me in a pool hall. I do
mm-hmm.
all that crap because I knew I could. I didn't have the time nor the interest, and I didn't want to burn the calories doing it when I was a paid bodybuilder. And now you'll find that I'll take up a game of basketball in a heartbeat. I'm not good. I even try tennis and I even golf. But trust me, being an athlete, it liberates me from the gym, and I love it. It gives me peace of mind and it gives me some balance.
Yeah, yeah. It's funny you mentioned that. I remember when Arnold said that too. He said when he was competing, he wouldn't ride motorcycles. He wouldn't go skiing because he was always worried about getting hurt, you know, and he couldn't do that for the competition. Then once he retired, he was able to do all that.
Yeah, and people have to understand that there is a second act. Like, look, even playing football, look, Tom Brady's going to retire at some point. I doubt in 10 years we're going to hear rumors that Tom Brady's going to come back because he can still throw the ball 50 yards, right? Like, come back to what? Once you've done it all, there's really nothing to come back to. Yeah, the competition, the quality, there's peaks and valleys. There's, you know, sometimes like in boxing when Mike Tyson let's go back to Muhammad Ali. When Muhammad Ali kind of went out on his chair when Larry Holmes beat the hell out of him.
Yeah.
We had the Larry Holmes era, which it wasn't very exciting, right? Mm-hmm. And then after Larry Holmes, Mike Tyson beat him up for Muhammad Ali. We got excited about Mike Tyson for a good, I don't know, it was a good run. He had a run from like 86 to 90, right? Four or five years. And then after him, it was Evander Holyfield, and it was so-so. And then it was Lennox Lewis. And after Lennox Lewis, it was Klitschko, and like nobody even knows or cares anymore.
You're right. Nobody even knows who the champion is.
Yeah, well, they're basketball players. You got Tyson Fury, and some other guy, Wilder and Anthony Joshua. They're all 6'8", 6'9". It's not even it's not even a fair fight. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So that sport change, bodybuilding has changed along the same way. People thought when Arnold won the 1980, it was such a controversial win that it was so bad for bodybuilding that the bodybuilders actually boycotted the 1981, and Franco Colombo wins by default. But guess what? In 82, it survived. Here comes Chris Dickerson. Here comes Samir Banu in 83. And boom, Lee Haney has an eight-year run, and bodybuilding throughout the 80s was at its peak. Couldn't have been more popular with Lee Haney.
Right.
You know, now, and then Dorian comes and challenges him and makes things interesting, and he wins for 6 years, and he gets hurt. Now what are we going to do? Now it's wide open in 98. And instead of one of the Hall of Fame guys like myself and Kevin and Flex and Nasser and Vince Taylor, boom, here comes Ronnie Coleman for another 8 freaking years. And when Ronnie goes out, Jay Cutler. I mean, so we're at this crossroads now where it's a wide open field. Nobody's an A-lister going into this contest. They don't have that pedigree. But someone's got to win it the same way it was in 1981.
Yeah.
And we've survived since 1981, haven't we? Franco Colombo wasn't the savior of bodybuilding, but someone had to win the show, and the show had to go on. And we survived post Arnold. We survived after Lee Haney and Dorian and Ron. We're going to survive now. As a matter of fact, for me as a fan, and I haven't missed this show since I first did it in 1988. Every year I've been there. That's how committed I am to the sport of bodybuilding. Never missed one contest since 1988 at the Olympia weekend. I've seen every show from the stage, in the stands, and even in the back green room, calling it for play-by-play for the World Wide Web. I'm more excited about this competition because it's either ushering in a new era. There'll be a 15th Mr. Olympia if Dexter Jackson doesn't win it again for the second time. And we're curious to see who that's going to be, because it can be any of those guys in the top five, and what a responsibility that person is going to have. What a life-changing moment for that individual. And what responsibility will he have in light of the situation going on with Sean Roden, and also how companies and business and responsibility of being Mr. Olympia, it's going to change the game in 2020 for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, you mentioned what responsibility the Mr. Olympia would have. And I remember you were saying that when you were going up against Dorian, you were saying, if I won the Olympia, I would get on TV, I would go on the talk shows, and I would get it in the media, sort of like what Arnold did. Well, now the whole media landscape has changed with social media and stuff. So the current Mr. Olympia, what should he do to advertise the sport or promote the sport or promote himself?
Well, you're talking about the current Mr. Olympia. Right now, he needs to lay low.
The 2019 winner I'm talking about, like the new guy.
So the 2019 Mr. Olympia has got to set himself apart from what hasn't happened in 2018. Mm-hmm. What we haven't seen from the 2018 Mr. Olympia was we just didn't see a lot of brand awareness. And a lot of, you know, that doesn't mean that they're not busy. I mean, Sean Roden was all over the world. I saw him in China. I saw him over in Germany. He was all over the world doing things for him as an individual, which is all the responsibility he has. But I think to whom much is given, much is required. It's easy for someone that's not the champion to say, and Sean Roden said this about Phil Heath, you need to do more. You're not doing enough. And if I was the champion, here's what I would do. And then Sean won the title. and he was almost an invisible entity.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, we know that Phil Heath, when he was Mr. Olympia, he was guest posing everywhere.
Yeah.
You know, he and Sean Roden, I think, was canceling guest posings everywhere, just the opposite. And was pretty invisible, and he didn't have maybe the same publicity machine, because then, of course, Phil Heath had 7 years to build it up. But in his first year, he did manage to eke out a little documentary that his supplement company, Olymp, has helped manage. But I think he changed supplement companies. He changed trainers. And each athlete is different. They're going to look at it with different eyes. I mean, Dorian Yates was never going to move from England to California and pursue the Hollywood dream.
Right.
I was born and raised in California. Hollywood's 30 minutes away. I mean, it's a natural. I mean, we grew up out here competing, me, Flex, and Chris. Who had the best car? Who was the flashiest dresser? Who had the best watch? I mean, the bar was raised for us Californians to go Hollywood if we had the opportunity to win that title. So our mindset was different. Plus, we got to watch Arnold in the gym every day and Lou Ferrigno. We kind of knew there might be better vehicles for us and people that could actually help us go Hollywood, which is mainstream, whereas Dorian is from Temple Gym. He was a punk rocker. I mean, he's English. He doesn't even have the same mentality.
Right.
Right? Arnold's been here since he was a teenager, so he knew it, and that was his dream, to be a box office draw, be in the politics, married a political figure with his wife, and he did everything that every bodybuilder would love to do. Dorian didn't have that personality. Sean Roden, as quiet and soft-spoken as he was never going to be that guy.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think, for example, let's say Brandon Curry wins. He's a father. He's got four kids. He spends half the year over in Kuwait. He's not going to be that guy should he win. Rolly Winkler, he speaks English, but nobody can really understand him. He lives in Curacao. He goes back and forth to the Netherlands.
Mm-hmm.
He's not the prettiest guy out there. And he doesn't have, you know, English is a second language.
Yeah.
And it's still a work in progress. So he would win the title and he would do what Dorian did. He's going to go home and enjoy his family and make his money the old fashioned way. So we don't know what the next Mr. Olympia's role or responsibility. It could be freaking William Bonek. And William Bonek is no different than Rolly Winkler. He's from the Netherlands. He wins. We live in America. We may not see William Bonek because mm-hmm. he lives there. He might become a hometown hero, but is America going to embrace him? And he's never even in America. Like, you know what I mean?
Right.
So I don't know. So, and somebody like 1998, nobody saw Ronnie Coleman coming from ninth place. But guess what? You know, what if Hadi Chupin jumps in this show and he gets a visa from Iran? And next thing you know, he's leapfrogging over all these guys, because I personally believe Hadi Chupin could probably beat William Bonek. If William Bonek was second or third, Hadi Chupin could be second or third or even first.
Mm-hmm.
Now we have an Iranian crown Mr. Olympia, and we're at war. You know, we're basically, Donald Trump's got us going to war with these guys.
Right,
so
right.
Is it a possibility? Anything's possible if the guy's on stage.
Yeah.
And then it could be someone we're not even talking about. And this would have been a great opportunity again. Kai Greene made his announcement early in the year, or Phil Heath made his announcement early in the year, that these opportunities would have opened. As unfortunate as they are, I trained every year thinking and believing I was going to be Mr. Olympia if I was prepared. I wasn't going to beat Dorian. I wasn't going to beat Flex or Chris. I wanted to be prepared if the opportunity came.
Mm-hmm.
Opportunity means preparation. Boom, I'm standing there strong. In 1994, that opportunity almost came. He tore his bicep getting ready for the show. I wasn't wishing or expecting any injury, but it happened, and it could have taken him all the way out of the contest. I was second. I could have won by default if he wasn't there.
Yeah.
He was there, and I made it a very controversial victory for him. But nonetheless, I had to come prepared. So if the right guy shows up at the right time and is prepared, all the people we're talking about that we know are in this show could become irrelevant. And this back of the pack guy that was a bottom feeder could win, which was Ronnie Coleman, which was Jay Cutler in his first Olympia. Jay was like 12th or 14th and moved up
15th,
from 9th.
I think. Yeah. Yeah.
So these things happen. And if it does happen, there's really no one there to tell you how you need to be Mr. Olympia. Joe Weider's not there anymore.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the role of the IFBB Pro League president, Jim Mannion, to tell. But I do think that on some level, it would be great if there was a place or a mentorship that could be an honorary role or even a monetized role through the Federation and AMI and cooperation, where these guys, kind of like when you watch America's Got Talent, what's the other one? American Idol.
Mm-hmm.
They bring these celebrity singers in to judge the next generation. And then when they get to the final 10 or whatever, they'll bring that superstar guy that's already made it, and he'll come in and and he'll do a duet with you or play the piano for you or teach you your vocals so you're prepared to go out and be the next American Idol. It'd be nice to see this guy that wins the Olympia have the opportunity as a package that when you win this title, and it's really the downtime after September for the Mr. Olympia, you win this title, it's grandfathered in that you're going to go and spend a weekend with Lee Haney. You're going to spend a weekend with Jay Cutler. You're going to spend a weekend with Dorian Yates. And you're going to find out what it's like to be Mr. Olympia and Ronnie Coleman and pick their brain, have them mentor you, and then we're going to send you out into the world in 2020 for you to be presidential, you know, to be that representative. It's not in existence. There's no cooperation with the other Mr. Olympias. They're retired. They have no obligation. But yeah. How cool would that be?
Yeah, that's a great idea.
Going into the show, I'm looking down and I'm looking at Lee Haney, Dorian Yates, and Ronnie Coleman, and Jay Cutler, knowing that I've just been handed this check. I'm holding that Sandow trophy. And literally my first order of business is that I get this little mentorship program that comes with Mr. Olympia, and all four or five of these Olympia winners have a different take on how I should act, what's my value, what I can ask for guest posing, how to market myself. That's invaluable information from veterans that have been there, they're tried, true, and they're tested, and now you're prepared to go out and be that representative. Without it, they're left to their own devices, their own ideas, and again, you've just given this kid that may never have really thought he could be number one, huge responsibility to represent this entire industry and that entire corporation that is AMI. For me, that's a cautionary tale right now where we live, that we need to get in front of this. These guys can't be left to their own devices. You know that if I'm right now coming out as the number one draft choice in the NBA or the NFL, that they're going to have their veterans school and educate me on how to act, where to spend my money, how to invest my money. They're going to teach me about curfew. They're going to tell me, I'm going to be taught the protocol of being an NBA player or an NFL player. That happens right now for everyone. And then the athlete, when they screw up, it's on them. But they get that tutelage, they get that mentorship from veterans. They held Magic Johnson after he retired from the Lakers. They held him as the guy to do the recruiting. And so when you were the number one guy and you came to watch the Lakers, you're going to deal with Magic Johnson. He was the face of the Lakers. Well, yeah. It would be nice if we move into this place. When I win the Mr. Olympia, I'm on a jet plane to Florida or New York, and I'm in the headquarters of AMI because it's their contest that I'm winning, and I'm getting this dictation over the weekend, what's expected of me for the calendar year 2020. Mm-hmm. Here's what we want to do with you as a product, as our face of our sport. Here's what our plans are for you so you know what's coming this year. We expect you not to walk around at these appearances that you go to wearing sweats. You're Mr. Olympia. You dress like Mr. Olympia. You represent us. You wear a suit and tie. We expect you when a promoter brings you to a show and they fly you in and they put you up, we expect you to be there at the prejudging to support the amateurs coming up. We expect you to speak at the microphone before or after you do your guest appearance. We expect you to acknowledge.
Right.
Your role is, acknowledge us. You're part of a bigger picture. You're not just out there with our $400,000 check in your bank representing you. You're representing us. It's our, and that's not happening. And that conversation does need to take place.
Yeah, that's a great idea. I never thought about that, but that is a great idea.
It's amazing that we've got this far without it.
Yeah.
But look, change comes hard and it comes swift. In light of our current situation going on in bodybuilding, this is something that should be mandated, like mandatorily. We got to get ahead of this and make sure that the next champion is prepared and has our support and has our mentorship and wisdom so he doesn't get into certain situations. Right now, it's a bad case that we're looking at, but it could be another situation down the road.
Yeah, yeah. Do you think AMI made the right decision with Sean Roden not allowing him
Yeah, absolutely. Listen. Let's change the job description. Let's say he's a seventh grade school teacher, and your daughter, who's be about 13 or 12 or 13, and he's teaching, economics or science, and your daughter comes home and says, "Hey, Dad, my science teacher's charged with rape. He there's a warrant out for his arrest. You read it on the news. Turn on here. Look at TMZ. Look what they're saying." Do you send your daughter to that class on Monday?
Mm-hmm.
does the principal allow him to come to work?
Yeah, no way.
Yeah, it's like, look, you got to handle your business. I'm not saying you're guilty, but you're suspended until you finish what you have to do, because I think that's probably more important than you in here trying to teach these seventh graders with this type of a distraction and try to explain away your case and maybe talk yourself into a hole. You're better off handling your business. AMI, the airlines, the police department, the school district, the liquor store would put you on suspension. And mm-hmm. if we're talking about sports, listen, Adrian Peterson spanked his child. He used like a switch or a Hot Wheel track or whatever, the same thing I used to get my ass beat by. And his child had marks on his body. His child. And the Minnesota Vikings got rid of him until they could establish whether or not this was child abuse. We're not talking about rape. We're talking about child abuse. And once he was, I don't want to say exonerated of the charges, but once the charges were mitigated through the court, he then got picked up by the Washington Redskins, didn't he? And he had a second shot. He didn't get banned from, he wasn't banned from the NFL. It ran its legal course and they let him back in the NFL and he resumed his career. Why would this be any different? Why would this be any different? So there should be something that's glaring in terms of a code of ethics, a code of conduct of unbecoming. Just the mere accusation in and of itself, anybody can bring a charge. But the fact that you're involved in the case means you are suspended until you resolve this case. And that's bottom line. So why would you then, if you do that, then why would you continue to promote someone that's caught up in a case like this? You have to do both, and you have to do it quick. You got to do it swift. And they did. It was swift justice, because if you leave that door open right now, it leaves the door open for people to come and inquire. It becomes a bigger story than the actual contest. And I trust and believe the Mr. Olympia has been around for 55 years. The Olympia is bigger than this. So we don't want this story to take on a life of its own and become the focal point where there's collateral damage to the good people that actually are doing the business of bodybuilding. You wouldn't want that distraction.
Right. Do you think if Sean is found innocent, he has a career after this?
Well, he's 44 years old. Do you think if he won the Mr. Olympia this year that he'd be back next year? Probably. Unless he had a plan B and then he only wanted to win it twice. But I imagine that if he won it for the second time, it validates his existence, his greatness in the sport. And he may want to go after number three because these young guys can't catch him. So if he's healthy and there's nothing wrong with him, look at how old is Dexter Jackson? He won it in 2008. He could have sailed off into the sunset.
Yeah, right.
And here we are 11 years later at 50 years old and he's still doing it. Sean's 44. Yeah.
Right.
So Sean doesn't show any signs of aging, and he's beating a 50-year-old Dexter. So he has longevity and he has opportunity. This case right now is too big for him of a distraction, I believe, to be trying to do both simultaneously if he's exonerated. Now, if he's guilty, it answers all questions of what's going to happen next. But if he's exonerated, like Kevin Spacey was, you know, Kevin Spacey was accused of, you know, this.
Yeah, I just saw that on the news yesterday.
What was the accusation? He was brought in. He was brought in for what? I mean, the kid was 18 years old, and he was texting his girlfriend about being fondled in a public bar by Kevin Spacey, the actor, and he was grabbing his junk, and he was doing all these things, and he had all this text message communication. Brought him up on charges. Went out to the universe that Kevin Spacey, you can call him a pedophile, but he was a molester, I guess, at that time, right? He was molesting the guy. And then they brought it to court 6 months later, after Kevin Spacey's lost everything. He was a lead in some TV show. He had some stage production and, you know, he had a legitimate career. All that shit went away.
Yeah, right away.
And then suddenly the phone that this kid was using to text his girlfriend disappeared, and the digital data, there were some deleted text messages that they couldn't explain. And then the kid took the fifth, and then the kid missed a couple of court dates, and so they threw the entire case out. Nothing happens. It's a nothing burger.
Right.
Except Kevin Spacey's got the scarlet letter. Guilty or not, he can go around and tell the entire world, hey, this never happened because I wasn't found not guilty. They threw the case out. Well, if this girl winds up being a no-show or changes her mind, the damage is already done. So the only thing that Sean can do is basically he's got a PhD in this industry. He's got an MBA.
Yeah.
He's got a doctorate degree in bodybuilding. So you come back and you do what you know best. If it's put that much of a sour taste in your mouth, now you're exonerated or you're found not guilty and you sail off into the sunset and you develop another career. I don't know what his interests are. His interests may have just been being the best bodybuilder in the world and dealing with endorsements and shaking hands and kissing babies. That will stop. That's not happening anymore. That's right. Not happening anymore. Even if he's not guilty, that is not happening. You're no longer Mr. Olympia in the eyes of a lot of people. You're a rapist.
Yeah.
And that's a harsh reality that he may be faced with, even if this girl disappears. And that's the problem with our judicial system, is that they try to protect the identity of the accuser. And the accused is left to make sure that he convinces the world he's innocent. And there is no such thing as innocent until proven guilty. The Central Park 5 proved that. If you didn't see that on Netflix, Park 5, they went to jail for 20 years. Mm-hmm. And they had DNA evidence that exonerated them. None of those boys had their DNA on it. And then they had a guy come forward and say, I did it. And they had to let him go. And they gave out $41 million. And people thought, wow, $41 million split five ways. That's $8 million a person. No. You know how much legal fees? And how much is a year of your life worth? What's your valuation on that?
Yeah.
Those guys had to pay their lawyers, and when they got done, they have no career, no job, no nothing. They got peanuts. They probably were left with some freaking bills.
Yeah.
In this scenario, as bad as it is, he's looking at 10, 15, 30 years of life.
Yeah.
In a charge like this.
We mentioned Kai Greene earlier. Do you think there's a chance he's going to go in it?
I had this conversation earlier, and you got to realize that Mr. Olympia is not just a show you decide you want to compete in. This is a childhood dream for most of us.
Mm-hmm.
This is something that takes a lifelong body of work. If you know Sean Roden's story, you'll know he took a 7-year hiatus when his dad died and he became an alcoholic. But his dad's dying advice to him was, go back to doing what you love. Go back to being a bodybuilder. And Sean remembered that, and he went back to being a bodybuilder, and he gave him purpose. And it gave him drive, and he remembered that this is something that I should do and something I can be. And it takes on a life of its own, and it's almost like the blood rushing through your body like clockwork. You wake up to eat your breakfast and take your morning piss, and you do your gym, and you do it over and over, and you do it day in and day out. And your mind is constantly two steps ahead because you're counting down on the calendar to what you're trying to become. And then suddenly that contest comes, and you're on the stage, and you're prepared. You don't just flip that switch in 8 weeks. Because opportunity knocks, you flip that switch in 8 weeks and go, I'm going to go be the best bodybuilder in the world. That's a childhood dream for many people that takes years of preparation. And if you think that you can just jump up there and do it on a haphazard effort because opportunity knocks, you know, you could be in for a very rude awakening. And we can use Kevin Livroni as an example. We can use Flex Wheeler as an example. We can use a lot of guys that have come back, the Incredible Hulk, who stood toe-to-toe with Arnold Schwarzenegger in 75 in South Africa, as an example of a 17-year layoff. He came back and he looked okay at 42 years old. But, you know, it's still 17 years. You don't just wake up one day and decide to do this. And the person that – if there's anybody that can wake up and do it, because he still looks like he's putting in work. He looks like he's training. And the depth of the field is less. You don't have Phil Heath. You don't have Big Ramy. You don't have Sean Roden. So the depth of the field is less. And if I'm on the sidelines and I'm looking, I might be tempted to think, okay, well, this is about conditioning. Let me up my cardio, drop my carbs, work on my posing. I look, you know, I'm sizing these guys up. These are guys I can beat. Mentally, in his mind, he might think that. But it doesn't always translate to standing on stage in trunks on the day while these guys have been training nonstop, religiously. And a guy like Hadi Chupin, a guy like Brandon Curry, even William Bonick, can take a guy like Kai Greene out. Remember, Kai Greene was losing to Cedric McMillan at the Arnold Classic 3-4 years ago.
Yeah.
And Kai Greene came from behind to beat him in the posing round, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Cedric McMillan, I don't believe, was ever in the top five of the Mr. Olympia.
Yeah,
he
you're right.
Won an Arnold Classic. But he's never been in the top five. So Kai was losing the last time we saw him. He pulled out a lucky win over Cedric. And Cedric has never been in a promise fulfilled on that Olympia stage. He's got an Arnold Classic win. He's won the Lou Ferrigno legacy. He won over in San Marino. I've seen, and he's won in Germany too. I know all these guys' careers. I was there in person when they were winning these shows. When you start stacking that up, you got to think William Bonick never took his foot off the gas. Brandon Curry couldn't bust a grape a few years back when it came to the Mr. Olympia. Now he's knocking on the door. Roly Winkler, who would have thought he's going to be in the top three of Olympia? Come on. William Bonick's already been second. So these are not, while they may not be the names that we're familiar with, these are not guys that you can just get off the couch one day and up your cardio and reduce your carbs and think I'm going to come and pick up and it's going to be business as usual after a 4-year layoff. If he does, he would deserve it. I think we'd all bow down to Kai Greene. But I don't like to live in the past because the past has never been kind to those guys when it actually tries to materialize from the great Gary Stridham, the White Rhino, to Kevin Livroni, to even Muhammad the Egyptian came back to the Ironman, and we were all excited, and it just didn't pan out for him. He was just another body on the stage. Kai Greene looks phenomenal by himself in his Instagram photos, and so do I,
yeah,
by the way.
Yeah.
That ain't the Mr. Olympia stage, so I'm not 100% convinced. And if anybody could do it, it would be someone like Kai. But he's got so many things going on that I just don't think that he'd have to go out to Kuwait and train with the oxygen crew.
Yeah.
The camel crew.
And he's only got 8 weeks.
And he's got a million things going on. Listen, Kai doesn't need it. But if I were Kai, I would say, this is my shot. This is my opportunity. That door is wide open. I'm going to kick that thing in. I'm going to let everybody know I'm signing that contract and I'm committing. And he's one of the few that I think could probably pull it all together. But there's so much noise in his head with all the other things going on. And he didn't expect that Sean wasn't going to be in it. He didn't expect that Big Rami might not be in it. So all of those factors, you know, these are happening in real time. And he may be booked for the rest of the year already. I am. I'm going to Switzerland. I'm going to Chile. I'm going to Iraq. I'm all over the place.
Right.
And so trying to just jump back in. And by the way, it would be a comeback for Kai Greene because he's been missing for 4 years from that stage. It'd be a short comeback, but it would be a comeback nonetheless. And we've got to assume that he's healthy. We also got to assume that he can train Olympia style, which when he got his three first runner-ups to Phil Heath, each year was like consecutive. He didn't take a year off.
Yeah,
he was grinding every year to go up against Phil Heath, who got seven, and Phil never took his foot off the gas. In this scenario, he hasn't been grinding for the past 3 years. I don't know if you ever watched the movie Rocky, but when Rocky actually won the heavyweight title, he started sleeping on silk sheets and bought the mansion and got the Ferrari and got the kid and got the dog and all that. And the next thing you know, Mickey was going nuts. He's like, dude, you're civilized. What the hell's going on? You're about to fight this wrecking machine, man. What the hell's wrong with you, right? And then he flipped the script when he had to fight Drago. He went out there. He's running in the hills. He's running in the snow. He's doing all that. He got back to the serious business, right? I don't know that Kai Greene has that when you get civilized.
I think a lot of people are looking at him like, well, he's 300 pounds. He could just step in and win it anytime he wants. He's just got to diet a little bit. But you're right. I mean, when he was taking second, though he worked consecutive, he was training all year. Bodybuilding was his life. And it's already been, like you said, 4 years since he's done it. So it's, you can't discount that time.
He didn't have 5 million followers on Instagram. He wasn't in high demand. And he didn't have other options, shooting little movies and doing his Comic-Con stuff. He looks like he's living the life of his dream right now. And I think the Olympia would make all of that stop.
Yeah.
And God forbid he came in and he got third or fourth place. I mean, now the shine is washed off and suddenly he's humanized and maybe it hurts his popularity. But I tell you what, it'd be a hell of a ride if I heard tomorrow that he signed the contract and Dan Solomon's showing and waving it around. I guarantee all the other guys would take their training to another level. And I guarantee you that Kai Greene would be the man to beat. But now it would be up to him to make that a reality. And that's where injury can loom right over your shoulder because you're trying to do too much in too short of a time. We all know the gravity of the Mr. Olympia. And that thing is super huge regarding the responsibility. I don't know that I would want that at this stage. Kai Greene is 44 years old too.
Yeah.
Maybe even older.
And Phil Heath is out, right, Sean? As far as you know.
As far as I know. I mean, he just finished a tour over in England. I'm not sure if he's back in the States, but he had a good 1 week tour of England. And how do you train for the Olympia when you're doing it for fans and you're doing remember, he's had surgery the last 2 years in a row. Mm-hmm. And the last 2 years in a row, he wasn't getting better. He was getting worse. And he was the one smart enough to say, hey, I'm not doing anything this year. I'm going to take a year off and let this stomach heal. Because, you know, 2 years in a row, two surgeries, a third one's not going to be good. You still have life after bodybuilding.
Mm-hmm.
So as appealing as it might be, he may also feel a little bit disenfranchised. Because if you listen to Phil Heath after he lost the contest, he never admitted that he lost. He felt like he was railroaded.
Mm-hmm.
He felt like the powers that be were against him from Friday all the way through the contest. And mm-hmm. I tried to make it clear to him that the powers that be may have been in front. I was in the back looking at a monitor. And as soon as you guys hit your first shot, I said, you were in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
And that you were pretty much playing catch up. And I stayed through that my entire time. So I don't know who the powers that be are, and I wasn't talking to them. They made the final decision, but I agreed with them, like a lot of people did. So let's get back to reality, Phil. Like, if you're off, you can expect to get beat by anyone. Forget Sean Roden. I mean, you're not entitled to win number eight because you got number seven. And number seven, you weren't at your best. And I don't know any Mr. Olympia in their last win being at their best, with the exception of Lee Haney at 31 years old back in 1991.
Mm-hmm.
So Phil Heath was 38 years old, 39, and Sean caught up to him the same way he caught up to Jay Cutler.
Yeah.
But it was a bitter pill for him to swallow. He hasn't accepted it to this day. But just because Sean's not in the show doesn't necessarily mean that Phil's stomach is correct. Doesn't mean he's healthy. He's wearing tank tops. He looks every bit Mr. Olympia again in the offseason. But he hasn't had a year of championship training, and we know for Phil to look the way he's supposed to, he needs that for a full year, not for a few months.
Yeah. And William Bonick, Brandon Curry. We mentioned Brandon Curry. He won the Arnold this year, and I think he's looking great. And I think he's got the eye of the tiger. So what do you think his chances are of actually taking the title home?
He's my favorite of the best of what's left.
Me too.
Brandon Curry's beaten all the guys that he's coming up against right now, so that's already said and done. He's beaten everybody up there. But again, Rolly Winkler's beaten everybody up there, and so has William Bonack.
Mm-hmm.
So everyone's taking turns of beating each one, and we can't go based on what they look like early in the year, because I just got back from China with Rolly Winkler, and he looked every bit freaky and 300 pounds and on his way to victory. But I saw Brandon Curry in May posing with all these guys, and he looked like he was way ahead of everyone.
Yeah.
And there's Dexter Jackson. If you listen to Dexter, he's going to repeat and be Mr. Olympia in 2019. He doesn't care about it, but Dexter's beating all these guys too, just not recently.
Yeah.
Just not recently. And there's a reason it hasn't happened recently. I mean, again, he hates it when I say it, but Father Time's undefeated. Can Dexter pull a rabbit out of his hat? We've seen stranger things. We just haven't seen him do it at the Olympia, not in recent years. And that's when it counts the most, against the same guys. Okay, so these are the same guys that have been beating Dexter for years. But Dexter is a perennial top five guy. He was seventh last year.
Mm-hmm.
By default, without Sean Roden, without Big Rami, and without Phil Keith, Dexter Jackson moves back up into the top six.
Yeah.
Because we don't have three new guys coming in that can keep him out of it.
Right.
Luke Sandow is a guy that got third at the Arnold Classic. He could potentially move into the top six. Brandon Curry, for all intents and purposes, every year he's gotten better, and he could get rewarded for his improvement. He may not have the best calves. He may not have the best hamstrings, but who does? You know, as big as Rolly Winkler is, his calves aren't all that impressive, especially compared to his arms.
Mm-hmm.
William Bonick is like the new Franco Colombo with a lot of muscle. You just can't do much more with it. So we're not going to expect a lot of changes from William Bonick because, first of all, it's his first time coming to the show without his coach, Neil Hill. They had a divorce over the weekend.
So
what's he going to wind up like training by himself without the advice of somebody that's always been there?
Mm-hmm.
He's got to rely on his own devices or someone else's opinion, and that could be a recipe for disaster.
Yeah.
So we don't know. William just created an X factor. Either he's going to be really, really good because he's doing it on his own finally, or he's going to suck because somebody came in to tamper with his last minute preparation and he's watery down and mm-hmm. just, you know, he's got all that crap in his head. You heard him. He's pretty emotional. So he could be totally in a whole nother world with this whole trainer divorce that he's had.
Yeah.
While Brandon is still in Kuwait, keeping his nose to the grindstone, doing what he's always done, and he's going to do what he's always did, and that's continue to get better. So he's my – I'm cheering for a guy like that because I think improvements deserve reward. And if he does come better than he was last year, he's going to be that X factor this year. He could potentially be the 15th Mr. Olympia.
Yeah, I think so too. Do you think the fact that he did the Arnold and won that, and then I was doing the Olympia, because sometimes that hurts people, right, when they do both in one year?
Right. Well, Dexter Jackson, Vince Taylor, those are a couple of guys that were able to do it. We know that Ronnie Coleman did it in 2001. He won both of those titles. We know that Jay Cutler was having a lot of success. He wasn't winning at the Olympia. He was getting second, but he won three consecutive Arnold Classics in the process while he was getting second place. It's not impossible. Flex Wheeler was a promise that wasn't kept at the Olympia, but he has those four Arnold Classic titles. So he'd peak in March, and he just slightly missed his peak in
He always missed the Olympia, yeah.
It is a very, very tough run. But, you know, Flex was coming home to a family. Brandon's going home to the desert. You know, he's like a soldier at war in the barracks, living out there in the desert. It's all he can do is sleep and train. So that focus may play to his favor. You know, Dexter's still in his element. He's training with Charles Glass out here in California. And he's been on autopilot. But I got to think that as you get older, your training, it's the style. I told you, the consciousness of your training, it changes. And if you're not doing those things that made you what you are, and you get into this maintenance mode, those changes are going to be hard to come by. So if Dexter comes in looking like Dexter, it's not enough. It's not enough. It's got to be more than just that. So he can go to Tampa Bay, theoretically, August the 1st, and win the Tampa Pro put on by Wings of Strength with Tim Gardner, but because he's competing against a weaker lineup. But the Olympia lineup, he's still got to beat five guys.
Yeah.
That beat him a year ago that really don't have to do a whole lot. As a matter of fact, he's now got to contend with Luke Sandow. Because now you have Rolly Winkler, you have William Bonek, you have Luke Sandow, you have Brandon Curry. That's five guys. So,
and I guess Luke Sandow's doing the Tampa too. I just saw that online today.
Yeah, and that's not a walkover for Dexter. So if he's going to have Dexter's got a lifetime invitation to the Olympia by winning in 2008. So he doesn't have to win Tampa to go. But Luke doesn't have the experience of peaking that many times in one year. So Luke's done the Arnold in Ohio. 2 weeks later, he did the Arnold Classic over in Australia. He did not win there, by the way. And so William Bonick won. So Luke didn't win the Australia. He didn't win that kind of. And so now he's going to have to go through Dexter. So this will be his third show in one year. And he's got to come to America to do it. Dexter's got to fly home. Dexter's got to fly home from California. That's not a bad trip for Dexter. So if Luke can't beat Dexter this August, he won't beat him at the Olympia in September. Because that'll be his fourth competition, and I think he'll run out of gas.
But if Dexter wins the Tampa and he looks really freaky, looks improved, that could help him with the momentum going to the Olympia.
He could potentially win that show and look very freaky. That's going to be tough to bring that look to Vegas because that's August 1st. Vegas is 6 weeks later.
Yeah.
And to try to bring that freakiness to Las Vegas, you're going to have to hold back in August. You can't shoot your wad.
Right.
If he shoots his load in August, he won't have nothing left for September. So on some level, he might actually look younger and bigger and fuller in August, and Luke Sandow would have to come in peeled. And Luke had some stomach issues there at the Arnold Classic in March. And I noticed that in between, he couldn't control his midsection. He was breathing in his stomach instead of breathing with his chest. Some minor nuances, and that's something where Dexter doesn't relax, and this guy could get exposed.
Yeah. And what about my favorite, Cedric McMillan? You think he's got any shot, or you think his career is pretty much winding down?
Yeah, I mean, we haven't talked about Cedric and the Olympia. He's not qualified for the Mr. Olympia by way of victories in 2018. But he is qualified by points. He does have enough points to get in.
Okay.
I don't believe he's turned in his agreement to compete yet. And he's been way off the radar. And the Mr. Olympia has never really been kind to him. It was kind to him 1 year. I believe he was sixth place. But 1 year he was training, got sick. He didn't even compete in the competition.
I remember that.
They over-dehydrated him, and he wound up in the hospital. You can thank Aceto, stuttering Chris Aceto, for that. And so he missed the Olympia. And then he was battling it out with Dallas McCarver or Josh Lenarkiewicz somewhere around the eighth or the ninth place positions in the Olympia. Mm-hmm. He would run out of gas from March because he's doing the Arnold. And the Olympia, you just couldn't really count on him. And I've always had him as a perennial winner if he ever nailed it. But every year he's getting older. Every year he's getting older, the Olympia is getting harder. And so I don't have a lot of faith left in what Cedric might bring to the Olympia stage, even though we haven't heard anything from him. It doesn't always mean he's doing the business of bodybuilding. But if he's in that show, he's in the conversation for the top eight.
Mm-hmm.
This year, he could be in the conversation with the top six based on the absence of three.
Yeah. Players. Yeah. Right. You think he could have won it based on his potential?
Absolutely. So does Lee Haney.
Yeah. Yeah. To me, he looks like a bigger version of Lee Haney. Or he could have been.
Yeah. I think that what he has to do is dry up and he can't do that.
Yeah. All right, Sean. Well, before we leave, I want to talk, since this is Bodybuilding Legends, I want to talk a little bit about history, and you're a big history buff in bodybuilding as well. When we talk about going to the Olympia, it's like like a baseball fan going to the World Series or a football fan going to the Super Bowl. Was your first Olympia that you ever saw, was that the one you competed in 88?
It was not. The first one I ever saw, I started bodybuilding in 1983 at 17 years old.
Okay.
John Brown got invited to compete in the Mr. Olympia. I want to say it was 1985.
Okay.
It was 1985.
Yeah, he was in 85, in Belgium.
1985, and I went to a theater in Los Angeles to pay to watch the satellite feed.
Oh, yeah, I did that too a couple times. I did it for 85. Yeah, I remember in 85 they did that all over. I did it in Chicago.
Absolutely. They did it everywhere around the country.
Right.
And you paid to go in and sit down and you watched the live feed uninterrupted. It was a great live feed. I don't even know if there was commentators. I don't remember.
Yeah, but, in the theater. Yeah.
But to go from training in a gym with a guy, actually not training with him. He was beating my ass. I was really a punching bag for John Brown. I was a kid that was like, I had to go get the weights. I had to go get his food. I was definitely that guy that wanted to be like the man, but to be like the man, I had to do everything the man said. So when he said, take my car to put gas in it, bring over the weights, put the weights away, go get me some food. I mean, I was an apprentice.
Yeah.
And then suddenly, you know, the apprentice is watching the boss on TV on a satellite feed in another country.
Yeah.
I just thought, it was like watching the man on the moon.
I
had equity in it. I was like, holy shit, I know him. Like, you know, I knew what he was going to do posing wise. I was like, wonder, okay, so he's walked off the stage. I'm wondering what's happening backstage. You know, they didn't do a whole lot of pre-contest hype, so you didn't get any before stories of who these people are. And I knew who they all were because I lived and breathed the magazines, but now there's my friend.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm the one picking him up at the airport when he comes back from Europe in his car. That he made me put gas in before I went to pick him up. I had the keys.
Right.
His home phone, he couldn't have a home phone in his condo because his roommate ran up the bill. So he had a landline in my dad's house. I live with my dad. My parents were
divorced. Oh, really?
He had a phone with an answer machine at my house. So I'm picking him up and he says, make sure I need to know who called while I was gone because he's out of the country. So I had to listen to his voice messages, write on a pad of paper who called and when and what they said. And when I got him at the airport, and he got in the car, and I'm the driver. He's sitting in the passenger seat reading all of his messages. This is what he said. That's the time. Those were the times we were living in. But
yeah.
I was doing it happily. I was happy to know this person of this magnitude. Now, John wasn't even in the top 15, okay? He had torn his pec.
Right.
But it was such an honor and a privilege to be around this Olympian that would take time to like talk to me and allow me to be in his world that made me get a sniff, a taste of what celebrity and hard work and stardom can do for a person. Because mind you, John Brown, I follow him around. We'd go to these El Torito or El Paso Cantina or different places, and the Rams football players were there from Anaheim, Eric Dickerson, and you know, all, even Marcus Allen, because the Raiders were in town. He knew all the football players, and I'm there. Football was my
guy. Wow. That's cool.
I mean, I look like his little brother, right? Because I'm right. I'm quiet, I'm shy, and I'm really, really young. But those guys were like, you know, the Porsches are parked out front, and John's got his Jerry curl and his big overblown jacket, and he's in the universe. And I'm hanging with him, and all I could think of one day was being like that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So that first Olympia experience for me was something that I soaked it up like a kid staring at the man landing on the moon, one small step for man, one great leap for mankind. When I got to the Mr. Olympia 3 years later for myself, and the roles were switched, because John was pretty much done, and now it's my turn. I was like him. I was a pace car on the racetrack, but I was in the Mr. Olympia. I was 20, turned 22 the day after the Mr. Olympia competition.
Yeah.
And I stood there in Los Angeles at the Universal Amphitheater. I felt like I was getting my diploma, where you walk across the stage when they said, "And from the United States, Sean Ray." I was like, "Holy shit, I'm here." I mean, yeah. I'm like, dude, I was done. I was, you know, I wasn't ready for the show. I guest posed all year. I ate like shit. I knew I wasn't prepared. The muscles weren't popping. I didn't feel like a disappointment. I felt like, holy crap, I'm in the Olympia. Like, nobody at that moment could have been more happier and more proud of themselves than me until they started doing the call outs. And I was standing there, and I wasn't being called out. Mm-hmm. And I was watching. It was like, I went from that kid sitting looking at the monitor at John Brown to that kid standing on the stage watching the Mr. Olympia, not realizing that I'm in the fucking Mr. Olympia, right? I'm in this thing, and I'm just watching. Now I got the best seat in the house. And then the reality of me not getting called out, I felt left out. I felt, what an opportunity I just missed. Like, I'm supposed to be out there. Mike Quinn is getting called out before me. I didn't value Mike Quinn's physique. I thought, nah, I got a better physique than him. He's got no hamstrings, got no calves. He's top heavy.
Right.
That was the year Mike came in. He was like 204 pounds. We'd never seen him that small, but he was ripped, right?
Yeah.
And then I'm looking at Lita Brada in his sweats before the show, and I'm thinking, God, he looks like he's 100 pounds dripping wet. I got this guy. And he peels off, and standing there looking at him 5 feet away, he looked like Mr. Olympia to me.
Mm-hmm.
And Lebrada wound up getting, I think he was, what was he? He was fourth place that year.
Yeah.
And then, of course, Gaspari. I mean, the guy's living and breathing right in front of me. I could see the glutes and the veins and everything that we'd seen in the magazines. And then there was Haney. I'm like, oh, shit. No one's beating him. Like, why are we all here? I went from depressed, because then I started getting called out with Robbie Robinson. I got called out with Ron Love, and I got called out with Bob Parris. These guys missed their peak clearly.
Mm-hmm.
They're at the back of the pack. I'm posing against Samir Banu. I'm like, hey, that's Albert Beckles. I'm being called out with Albert Beckles. when I came home, and I'm eating my cake and my ice cream, and I'm getting fat and I'm getting happy, I'm replaying it in my head going, I beat some really good guys. I was like 14th in this show that had 24 guys, and I beat Robbie Robinson.
Yeah,
I beat Albert Beckles. I beat Peter Hensel. I beat freaking, what's his name? Rolf Mueller from Gladiator.
I started
feeling like I'm off, and I beat those guys, and I held them in high esteem. I said, when I come back and I'm ready, it's going to be on and cracking. And of course, I didn't compete in 89 because Wayne D'Amelio suspended me for not competing in the Arnold Classic when I got hurt.
Right.
I wasn't hurt, but I was injured enough I couldn't compete. I came back in 90 and I got third place. That was all attributed to me standing on that 1988 stage and feeling like I was ignored, feeling like I was a pace car, and feeling like I was a fan. I said, never again. I'm coming prepared. And I prepared for 1990. That's when I failed the Arnold Classic drug test in March.
Mm-hmm.
I came back and I passed the drug test. And I leapfrogged over everyone. I went from like 13th place to third place in Olympia. And that solidified the beginning of my run. And that's when I knew I belonged on that stage. Like, I felt worthy of being there. 1988, I still didn't feel, it was surreal. Like, I snuck in the back door and I'm here. But I qualified by getting fourth place at the Night of Champions because it was a top five back then.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, I felt like I snuck into the Mr. Olympia and I just happened to be standing on stage with these cats. But what a feeling it felt like when I did get the call out with Lee Haney and Lee Labrada, and I beat Gaspari. It's like, holy shit, I just beat Gaspari. Like,
right.
that, That gave me the validation I needed. And I got to tell you, like a father, John Brown was like singing my praises. Like, I told you this was going to happen. This ain't nothing new. I told you this is how good you were. Don't act surprised. This is where I told you you were going to be one day. And so all that validation came back when I got third place. And mind you, you know, I won the Auto Classic in 90, but it was an invitation. And I failed the drug test. So it was like an invalidation. Like, it was invalidated that I beat Mike Christian and Mike Ashton. Like, I was invalidated when I failed. Mm-hmm. But when I got third and I passed and I realized I'm third in the world, the person that validated my efforts the most was John Brown in 1990 by telling me that, what are you surprised about? That's what you're supposed to be in the top three. You've always had a top three physique. You know, welcome to the big time. That was enough confidence for me, John, that I could cut that umbilical cord of mentorship and own the space that I was creating for myself. And it was all Sean Ray after that.
Yeah, it's amazing, though, that when the first Olympia you ever saw when you were 17, 5 years later, which is a real short period of time, you're in the Olympia. That's incredible.
Actually, no, I didn't see the first Olympia in 1983. I saw it in 1985.
I mean, 85, yeah.
Yeah, I was 19 when I saw it, and that was
okay, that's right. Yeah.
So I was 19 when I saw that, and my birthday was on September the 9th. The Olympia was
3 years later. 3 years later, yeah. In the Olympia. That's unbelievable.
Yeah, three years later. That was, and you know, I listened to the Sean Roden story that he put out there, and I think a lot of the guys that have excelled have very similar stories of, like, even Dorian said this, like, can I, like, Is it possible? Like, should it be me? And then Dorian says, like, why? Well, hell, it's got to be someone. Why not me?
Right.
No one's training harder than me. No one's working harder than me. And I had that same mentality. I may never have become Mr. Olympia, which is very subjective, but I sustained a 13-year run on that Olympia stage because I was watching and fantasizing myself being there before I ever got there. And when you mentioned that I'm a historian, I became a historian because I wanted to know everything about the sport that I fell in love with. I wanted to know everything about the winners that had won it prior to my arrival. I wanted to know and learn from Joe Weider, who signed me to a contract, and his brother Ben. They founded bodybuilding. I wanted to know about these photographers, Chris Lund, Bill Dobbins, the guy John Balick, all these photographers that were doing the business. I wanted to learn about that, and as a result, I've got a huge library of work from different photographers, from Irv Gelb to Mitsuru Okabe. These are the guys that put the pictures. Ralph DeHaan, they put the pictures out there for the world to see. And without them, there's no Sean Ray.
Yeah.
So a lot of bodybuilders just haphazardly go, oh, I don't want to do a photo shoot today. I'm on low carb. You know, and then they wake up and there's no pictures of their youth.
Yeah.
Mine's documented because Joe Weider said early in my career, the only way people are going to know you're here is if you document it. Mm-hmm. And it stuck in my head. So when Chris Lund said, hey, Chris canceled on me, can you make it today? I'm on my way. I'd rather train in front of a camera than train by myself.
Right.
At least it's documented.
Yeah.
I wound up getting a ton of work because it created my popularity.
Mm-hmm.
So it is really interesting to be able to live the dream. And of course, there's a lot of great bodybuilders that were denied the goal and the dream of being Mr. Olympia. But there's so much more that goes into the preparation, that goes into the actual ceremony and the crowning of Mr. Olympia, to the post aspect of the Olympia. If you knew what the post aspect of the Olympia is, it is so much more than the hangover and the letdown that the contest blues come. People, they compete and they realize, what do I do with myself, right?
Yeah.
The contest is over. I don't have anything to do. I used to train twice a day and diet and countdown. The show's over. I don't even know what to do with my time. Well, for me, I would calculate and start planning my post-Olympia appearance and start going around the world. And I had lined up a lot because I'd be in my best shape. Mm-hmm. I'd line up my seminars, I'd line up my appearances, and I would take it all the way through the new year and shut it down in January so I could start getting back to the weights and get back to the business. But I was all over the place, and they were rolling out the red carpet, and I was staying in nice hotels, and I was being wined and dined, and it was the perks that I had learned from John Brown about being a celebrity, of how to market myself, and then how to ride the crest of the media machine that I'd made for myself to feel like a VIP. I didn't need the Sandow Trophy for someone out there in the world to want to fly me in, put me up, feed me, let me talk about bodybuilding or pose, and then give me money to come home. I mean, come on, are you kidding me? you're gonna pay for all of my travel. You're gonna pay for my hotel and feed me. You're gonna take me to some nice restaurants, and I'm gonna get a killer workout, and I can get a massage, and I can stay in this nice hotel, and you're gonna give me cash on my way out. Let's do it. And when you do that once, you want to do it again. You want to do it again. And I was coming home, and I was like living the life of John Brown. I mean, that, how crazy if that happened, if that encounter didn't happen with John in the gym, because I kept going back to be a stronger football player. I may have never become a bodybuilder.
Yeah.
Justin Bieber, without YouTube, we never would have heard of Justin Bieber, for example. And my kids grew up watching him, and he's done very well for himself. But those little happenstance in those little sound bites that happen in your life, they could take you places you never thought about going.
Yeah, that's amazing. Speaking of the Olympia, Sean, which do you think was the most exciting Mr. Olympia, or the top three Mr. Olympias that were the most exciting in the history of the sport, whether you saw them or not?
Yeah, I mean, you take off my first experience, because there's nothing like your first. I mean, we all remember our first everything.
Right, right. Going
into the 1991 Mr. Olympia, you know, I was interested in Mr. Olympias before I arrived, but I didn't have any vested interest. Like, I didn't give a crap who won. You know, like Arnold was done in 1980, and it was just a folklore and tale from other people's perspective of what really went down in Australia. But for me as a participant, 1991, you have to frame it up. I won the Arnold Classic in 1991. Lee Haney was coming off of the drug-tested Mr. Olympia, where he looked his absolute worst after winning seven of those titles. He looked his absolute worst in Chicago. I win the Arnold Classic in 1991. Dorian Yates just got beat in 1990 by Mohamed Ben Azizia. Mohamed Ben Azizia is 5'2 and 150, right? He was small, but he took Dorian Yates out. And of course, a lot of people don't realize this. The 1990 Olympia was drug tested, and Dorian Yates was second at the Night of Champions. There's a reason he was not in that Mr. Olympia. Okay, there's a drug test, and from May to September, Dorian Yates would have never passed that drug test. And in fact, Mohamed Ben Azizia, who won the Night of Champions, failed the steroid test in Chicago. Did you know that?
Yeah, I remember that.
Okay, so Mohamed took the gamble, and it backfired on him. Dorian didn't want to take that gamble, so he wanted to wait. And in 1991, there was no steroid test. So I win the Arnold Classic. Lee Haney won his seventh Mr. Olympia in 1990, looking his absolute worst. And now we're all three on a collision course for the 1991 Mr. Olympia being held in Orlando at the Disney Dolphin Hotel. And so going into that show, I'm thinking I got all the momentum, but here it seemed like 1988 all over again, because winning the Arnold Classic, which was like a blessing and a curse, I bought my first house. I got a raise from Joe Weider, because the WBF was trying to throw money around at people. And Joe wanted to lock up his people, because he had lost all these athletes, right, in 1990 after the Olympia, to the WBF. So Joe gives me a bump in pay. I get my house. I bought a Ferrari that year, and I was busy, 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 busy. And I've got this 91 Olympia bearing down on me, and I'm thinking I can shut it down at the end of July. I was in demand everywhere by getting third in 1990 at the Olympia, then winning the Arnold Classic. I was the next Mr. Olympia on paper.
Right.
My problem is that I believed I was going to be the next Mr. Olympia. I turned into Rocky after winning the heavyweight title and thought, I'd do what I always did. And I got kind of complacent. I got a big a boost in pay from Weider. I had a nice house. I'm over here looking at tile and marble and furniture, and my eye is not on winning the Olympia in March.
I took
my foot off the gas, because I just killed myself from the 90 Olympia, or I should say from the 90 Arnold Classic to the 90 Olympia to the 91 Arnold Classic. I needed a break. I remember Sean Roden just posed in May, and he said he needed to take a break, and he looked like crap, didn't he?
Mm-hmm.
You got to be careful where you take your break. So I win the Arnold Classic in 91, and guess who probably had their foot on the pedal since the 90 Olympia? Lee Haney. Guess who knew and had it scripted that he was coming to the Mr. Olympia in 91. Dorian. So he had all those two beasts had all that time to put their, you know, pedal to the metal. And then, of course, I had Vince Taylor at his all-time best on the Mr. Olympia in 91. And Sonny Schmidt, who came out of nowhere looking like a beast. And I'm running out of gas. And I wind up in fifth place at the Mr. Olympia, and I get to watch the Battle of Lee Haney and Dorian Yates, the beginning of Yates and the end of Haney. 91 was a classic Olympia for me. And by the way, there's no complaints. I was watery. I was mad. I was mad I didn't beat Lee Labrada, because that was on my bucket list, because I thought I'd beat him in 1990. And damn, he got me again. He was fourth. I was fifth. But the 91 Olympia wasn't talked about a lot, but that was a pivotal time in our bodybuilding, because it was the arrival of Dorian Yates. And then, of course, the 94 Olympia after that was really high on my list, because even to this day, I mean, I give Dorian all the credit in the world for changing the game in terms of being big and all of that stuff, but he looked nothing like he did in 93. And I just think when you come in subpar like Phil Heath did last year, you got to take some points. You got to take some points away from the champion. Yeah. Dorian showed up. He had this color on his body, and it was running like milk. It was just streaming down. His sweat was taking the color off of his skin, and it was like orange, burnt, orange, white, pasty skin underneath it. He was sweating a lot. The stomach was bloated. The bicep was torn. And for all intents and purposes, he did a very good job hiding that one left arm, right? But we all knew it was there. And we knew that the love – we could see the love handles when he stood there. And it really was a game changer for me in 94, because that was a time where they could have gone a different direction. And mind you, it was 1983. That was the last time we saw a bodybuilder about my size and stature in Samir Banu.
Yeah.
So here, bodybuilding, the look of bodybuilding could have been changed for good. And it went the other way, and I survived, obviously. It was 1984, and I competed until 2001. The other one, my third and final Olympia had to be 1998, because I was there on stage. I actually got engaged. I proposed after that show. I got fourth place, I believe it was. In 1998, I was fifth place. I actually was engaged for a brief moment in time. I had a lapse in judgment, and I proposed after the show. I proposed after the show because I felt like there was nothing better to do. I was mad. I was depressed. And there was a girl I was dating, and I thought, well, she stuck through me through all this shit. I'm done with bodybuilding. Let's get married and start a family. It didn't happen. It lasted about a month and a half or 2 months after the Olympia. But 98 was the launching and arrival of Ronnie Coleman.
Yeah, and that was a great show.
And, of course, we were competing in Madison Square Garden at the Felt Forum. I mean, New York.
Yeah.
I mean, for me, that 98 experience, everybody went to New York and landed and thought they were going to leave with the Sandow Trophy. I thought I was going to win. Flex thought he was going to win. Paul Dillette thought we all thought we were going to be Mr. Olympia because it was vacant. Nasser thought he was going to, we were all cocksure. And then when Ronnie leapfrogged over everybody, I don't think there was any argument that Ronnie should have won the show, except for the fact that he had bitch tits and he didn't get marked down. But even if you marked him down, Flex Wheeler's hamstrings were really watery that day. His glutes were really soft. And we saw things on Ronnie's body that day that we'd never saw on Ronnie's body in his life. And he was really extra dry. Had gyno that was really glaring, which was kind of scary to me, but I didn't think it was going to be enough to take the title off of him. And I just thought Flex was too watery from the back to reward him. I wound up in 98 in fifth place. I still was baffled by losing to Kevin Lavroni, scratching my head, going, what the hell's going on here? But the contest is for first and second. If you know anything about bodybuilding, it's not really about where you place if you're not winning.
It's about
did they get first place right? Because I'm still a fan, right? Like when I realize I'm not in the top three after prejudging, you kind of know that your mind goes, it takes you somewhere else. I never had false pretenses. When I knew I wasn't winning, my work was done. I'm gonna get my check. I'm gonna go on my tour. My monthly checks that I have from my sponsors are going to come on the first of the month, regardless of what happens. And my fans are going to love me regardless. So I could compartmentalize losing a lot better than some of the guys. And I was very vocal, but I was always vocal about the champion. I didn't care about Flex Wheeler and Chris Cormier and Nasser and Kevin. I didn't have no reason to attack them because I'm looking at number one. Mm-hmm. And in looking at, number one, I'm going to break him down. I'm going to try to find reasons why he shouldn't have won.
Yeah.
So you hear that. It echoes. It's loud because I have a passion. And when Ronnie Coleman won, you didn't hear anything from me about knocking him. As a matter of fact, that year I made my video. I think it was the Inside and Out video. No, it was the Final Countdown video. I was shooting a film that year that throughout my 12-week preparation to New York.
Okay.
And the day after the show, you saw me in Gold's Gym doing the business of bodybuilding. Like the show was over, and now I got my life back. And now I can go back to being a celebrity bodybuilder with no pressure for the next 9 months because I'm going to be an ambassador. I'm going to be the missionary that I dreamed about. So for me, the pressure of competing and winning the Olympia was I would leave that wherever I was. In New York, when I got on the plane, I landed and I went to a photo shoot and I did my video. I didn't come home and lock myself in the room because I didn't win.
Mm-hmm.
Like I got paid for posing on a stage. I had people cheering for me in the Felt Forum. I got to watch Ronnie Coleman make history. I mean, I'm still a fan, which is why I won't miss this year's Mr. Olympia because I want to watch history.
Yeah. So this year it's going to be almost like a situation like 98 where we're going to have a new guy win.
And who can't get
it? Unless Dexter. Unless Dexter wins again.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, like, I want to witness that history. One small fact about my history here, John, and people don't, a lot of people, your listeners might not know, but like, I'm such a fan that I keep track of little things. So, mm-hmm. You know, the Sandow Trophy was first created in 77 and Frank Zane was the first one to receive the Sandow Trophy, correct?
Correct.
I pride myself on touching or holding every Mr. Olympia Sandow Trophy ever issued after 1977, with the exception of Arnold and Franco. I never held either one of their trophies. So that's two guys.
Yeah,
but everyone else from Chris Dickerson to Samir Banu, Lee Haney, Ronnie Coleman, on down. After Ronnie, it was Dorian. Of course, it was Phil Heath, Jay Cutler, I didn't get the chance to hold Sean Rhodes this year. So I take that back. But that's nothing to nobody. But to me, it's part of my journey.
Yeah.
Like. I when Sean Roden turned pro, I was there with the microphone interviewing him for Muscular Development at the North Americas. Phil Heath's very first pro win was the Sean Ray Classic in Colorado, and he wound off seven Mr. Olympia titles after that. Ronnie Coleman in 1992 was getting last place in Helsinki, Finland, and I was helping him get the bags off the carousel at the airport in Helsinki, Finland. I mean, these little nuggets for me are huge. I was graduating high school in 1984 when Lee Haney won his first Mr. Olympia. And then before it was all said and done, I was battling it out with him in Chicago in 1990 for top three. So there is so much I get excited about that I don't have the chance to really express to people, that I'm more than just a loud mouth and a big personality and a Hall of Fame bodybuilder. I am a fan to the core.
Yeah. Well, that's why we love having you on the show, Sean, because you got a great history of the sport and some great stories.
Well, it's awesome to watch this whole game transition from one generation to the next. And here we are.
Yeah.
We got a 50-year-old Dexter Jackson. What a storyline that would be if he happens to pull off the victory. He shut up a whole lot of people, and the old men over 50 can wave a banner with him representing for us. And we also have a guy that has like four kids. I don't know that we had anybody that could win the Olympia with four kids.
I don't think so.
If Brandon Currie wins it, he's gonna, you know, and then we have the opportunity for a foreigner. It would be the first time a foreigner would win this title since 1997. 1997, the last foreigner we had win this title was Dorian Yates from England.
Yeah.
But we have a couple of guys. We have Roly Winkler from Curacao, and we have William Bonick from the Netherlands that could have the opportunity from another country to win this competition. And you can't discount the fact that Luke Sandow's in it from England. And, of course, if Hadi Chipin shows up somehow by some miracle from Iran, I mean, there's a whole lot of things that can happen this year's Mr. Olympia that we're not even really paying any attention to. But the one thing that we know can't happen, and it has, is that there can be someone we're not even talking about walking away with this year's championship.
Yeah. Yep, just like Ronnie Coleman did.
How can you not be excited about that? I heard Stutter and Chris Aceto on the Dave Palumbo show saying that this is going to be the worst Mr. Olympia because Sean Roden's not in it. Well, I heard all year that Sean Roden was the worst Mr. Olympia personality we've ever had. Not just now.
Right.
So I mean, the Olympia doesn't lose its shine because one, two, or three people are not in it. Yeah. The Mr. Olympia weekend is a lot of things to a lot of people. And if you don't know, there's a battle for an open 212-pound championship. It's wide open. There's no defending champion. A lot of guys that are smaller are paying close attention to that. Breon Ansley, he's got a very slippery title in the classic physique. He's won it twice. That's not guaranteed that he's going to win it three times because that's one of the fastest-growing divisions we have. And yeah. anybody can come out of the woodworks to win that title.
Right.
Men's physique, Jeremy Buendia retired after winning four. I don't think we're going to see another men's physique champion win four in a row ever because there's so many people doing it. And that title is going to be changing hands on a consistent basis, I believe, because these guys are really good when you start looking at the depth of that field and the bikini championships. I mean, the fitness and the expo. Come on, man. Are you going to tell me that there are people that come to the Mr. Olympia weekend that don't even watch the Mr. Olympia? So, I mean, there's so much going on. You know, people are working with the supplement companies and some of the new businesses with new products at the expo. Dan Solomon is trying not to be business as usual. He's adding some wrinkles. I mean, they're bringing in new sponsors. Trifecta's on board for 5 years. Wings of Strength is the biggest sponsor in the history of the game. Digital Muscle is doing the live webcast that I'll be a part of. There's a reunion of women bodybuilders taking place, a gathering of former Ms. Olympia champions and all the
women.
Yeah,
wow.
It's going to be taking place at the expo on Saturday. Wings of Strength is bringing that together. It's trying to get all the Ms. Olympia champions, but you know how that is, a reunion. There's always people that always life takes over and some of them don't show up, but the bulk of the women Ms. Olympia champions are going to be there.
Wow, that's great.
It's never happened, John. I mean, the men's had happened in 94, and I think they happened again in 2010. But for the women, it's never happened. So that'll be a really cool addition to the Olympia Expo weekend. But there's a whole lot of stuff going on that makes this year's Mr. Olympia weekend more exciting than last year. Because, look, we were force-fed a repeat Mr. Olympia for years. I mean, you take Dorian Yates, Ronnie Coleman, and Lee Haney, that's 22 years of Mr. Olympia titles. Add seven more with Phil Heath.
Right.
What is that? That's add seven more. That's 29 years. And then you throw in Phil, you throw in Jay Cutler with four. We're in 30 plus years between five different men.
Yeah.
So I'm ready for a new champion to see what happens, and I'll be there.
Yeah. All right. So it'll
tickets are available. They're available. www.mrolympia.com. I'll be doing the live webcast.
It'll be September 12th through the 15th. So I'll be there too, Sean. So thank you again for coming on the show. I really appreciate this wrap up or this preview, I should say, of the Olympia. And I'm really looking forward to seeing the two. And thanks again for your input. I know you're busy, so I appreciate you coming on, Sean.
Yeah, if you want to find out any more about me, check out seanray.fitness. You got it.
All right. Thanks, buddy. Take care. All right. Thank you for listening to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends Podcast. Thanks to our sponsors, Old School Labs and Florida Alternative Medicine, for sponsoring another episode. And thanks again to Sean Ray for taking time out of his busy schedule. He's very busy traveling, and he's also getting ready to promote this Olympia that's coming up in only 8 weeks. Sean is one of the ambassadors, and he's helping to do that. So thanks to Sean for taking time out of his schedule to offer his thoughts on the Olympia that's coming up this week. Next week, we will have part two of our Vince Taylor interview, so be sure to join us for that. And then after that, we will, as I said before, we will have our two-year anniversary special. So thanks again for listening to the Bodybuilding Legends Podcast. And we will see you guys next week. Take care.